This is what I do at the start of every single live. I'm just on my phone making sure that we are indeed in the right group. And we are. So good evening, everybody. And welcome to our second Glow Live with the fabulous Jason Greyston. Today we are talking about key areas in your business to focus on for growth and for revenue growth in 2024. Now, lots of you did say that you watched Jason and I's live last week. We've had some great feedback on it. So thank you so much for joining us again, Jason.
Oh, thanks for inviting me back. Yeah, I assume people got some value from the last time, otherwise I wouldn't be
Well, yes, you're quite right. So Jason is an entrepreneur, investor, and the host of the Always Free podcast. But Jason has also grown multiple businesses to very, very high figures. So I thought to set the scene, we would just hear a wee bit more about you, Jason, a wee bit more about your story for any of the ladies that potentially didn't get a chance to watch last week's live. And if you could tell us a wee bit more about your business journey as well.
Yeah, so originally I was electrician, and that was it. And then I kind of built my own business in the service sector, physical bricks and mortar business. And the idea was that I was to become financially free. So I started investing all my money, learned how to invest, learned how to buy stocks, learned how to trade. And then I used various kind of income growth strategies to accelerate that whole journey. And one of them was build a business. And in doing so, I kind of built that business into a couple of million pounds, three million pounds, I think was the highest year. And then I hit a point where I'd become financially independent, didn't need to work anymore. And then since then, I've started multiple different online businesses. I've invested in businesses. I'm an angel investor, all of which the businesses have hit kind of 1.7 million in the first year or two, and then
Wow.
scaled up. So we've just done about 3.5 million in the last 5 months on one of the businesses, and we're projected to hit about 10 million. And then some of my angel investments are due to sell for 100 million next year, 50 million the year after. So there's all these kind of businesses that I have input in. I've worked, I've done a lot of online business, education businesses and things like that, digital tech businesses, all that kind of stuff. And I think that my kind of strong point is just looking at logical ways to build businesses, numbers to focus on, what metrics to look at, and how to really move the needle. Because I see a lot of entrepreneurs, they kind of focus on the wrong things to grow and stabilize their business, or they focus on the right things but at the wrong time. And I see a lot of that, particularly from a angel investment standpoint, or a kind of a silent investor standpoint as well. So yeah, looking forward to sharing with you guys some of the things that I think will be really, really useful going into 2024.
Yes, this all sounds amazing, and you're obviously throwing about some big numbers there. So that is like super inspirational to hear. I am really interested and intrigued in what you're going to say in this chat because I am, and I know a lot of the business members, we're a mixture of right and left brains. So there's a lot of logistical and analytical entrepreneurs, but there's also a lot of creatives as well. And I know that I can speak for myself, being somebody who's more creative right than left. The numbers thing, and I'm probably that person who focuses on the wrong thing at the right time, or like the way that you said it. So this is going to, yeah, this is, I'm really looking forward to hearing about these key areas that you think that we should
Amazing.
be focusing on.
I think all entrepreneurs are like ADHD, and I think it's the same thing. I think being an entrepreneur is ADHD. I think it's literally the same thing. And you just kind of you get creative, as you say, you get carried away, and you get excited about building products or solving a problem, but you don't actually, a lot of people struggle, a lot of entrepreneurs struggle with moving the needle in the right direction to actually, one, make the money, two, keep the money, and three, make the business grow so that it's kind of effortless. They end up, a lot of the time, they end up on this, they're stuck in a rut. And it's quite, when you break the business down a little bit, which I'm going to go through, it's really easy to see actually what the moving parts and actually what you need to focus on. So yeah, I don't know how you want to roll with it. I could just kick off, or
Just kick
Yeah.
off. I'm sure we're
Yeah,
all weighted with bated breath here.
yeah. First of all, first of all, I want to kind of just dispel some kind of myths around business, because I do see a lot of entrepreneurs struggle with this whole kind of that person isn't as qualified as me, and yet they're doing more, and they're getting more money and all that, right? You really have to lose that in 2024, because no one really cares about qualifications. What they care about is getting results. So just to put that into perspective, I did some digging and found out that Rafael Nadal, the tennis player, he earns a lot of money, right? And nurses, in 2021, when you think nurses would have been really in demand, the average nurse was taking in like £43,000, right? Whereas Rafael Nadal earned 50 million that year, or 45 million that year. And people have this opinion that he just throws a ball around, and he can't, he can't possibly be as valuable as a nurse. And it does trigger a lot of people. That you see it all the time in these groups where people go, "Oh yeah, but nurses are underpaid." Yes, they're underpaid, that's true. But there's no there's nothing to do with ethics or morality in that. All it is income equals outcome. So the amount of people you can serve, and the impact you can make on someone's life, multiplied by the number of people you can do that for, that is how much money you'll make. And arguably, Rafael Nadal makes a smaller difference to your life, but because he's got such a scale and he can do that in volume, then he gets more money. And there's no morality to that. There's no, like, it's not a moral thing. It's not a question of morals. So I think a lot of entrepreneurs need to realize that actually you just need to serve more people, and you need to make a bigger difference to their life. There's a lot of crap products out there. There's a lot of crap services, and people put a lot of effort into these things, and entrepreneurship's hard. Otherwise, everyone would do it. That there's it is hard, and I know you put your love and effort into building something, and you think it's amazing, but it might not be that good. And I think that's the first step. I think just assessing your product and making sure that you're actually getting results for people, and then getting the results that make them want to go and tell people. That's the first, like, that's a given. And that's just so you guys know. Of all the businesses that I've just spoken about, we've never run an ad. So I don't even have a Facebook ad account. We don't have an ad. I've never run an advert. I wouldn't know how to run a Google ad, never run a Facebook ad, don't have a Facebook ad account or business account. So we've done everything organically and through word of mouth. So just to kind of put into perspective,
That's like
the
a mic
approach.
drop moment there. Everyone's
Right.
like,
Right.
what
Especially
the?
today, especially today. Right. So here's the thing. With the product, the next fear is, well, I need to build this amazing product and then go and get it amazing and get it all working and all shiny before I launch it. One of the things that I've always done is sell something before it's even built. So you see these people doing all the kind of launch parties and spending money on launches and all this kind of thing. Launching a business is nothing to be celebrated. Have a celebration when you're bringing in some money, right? But don't go and blow 10 grand at a bar or on business cards or all this stuff before you've even launched, because that debt will just stay with you. It'll put pressure on you. People at the launch will be like looking at you like, what's happening with the thing? Like, well, you'll just have all this pressure on yourself before you've even got off the ground. So don't do launches. Don't spend money on business cards and brochures and all that kind of stuff before you. What you want to do is you want to sell it before it's ready. And the way that I do that is I ask lots of questions. So I never build a business or a product to my idea. I might have the idea, but I never build it to what I think would be good. What I do is I ask everyone, what would you think about this? What problems have you got? What if there was this problem that solved this, this, and this? Would that be interesting? And I ask people what their problems are, what would be beneficial to them, how much they would pay for that. And then once you've got that information, you've then basically got confidence that there's already a demand in the marketplace to launch the thing, right? So now you start pitching it as if it exists. Now you start saying, I've got this program. you know, it's got, it's for this person, this specific person, and it solves this problem. It's going to be costed at around this. We're going to take in 10 people for the first go, and, you know, let us know if you want in. And you already know that there's going to be a demand there, right? So it instantly takes away this kind of desperate approach to selling it. You have more of a with or without you attitude, you know, which I think comes across, and people love that, because people don't like desperation. It repels people. So giving yourself confidence on the launch is going to do you every world of good, right? It's so, you know, build before, pitch it into existence as if it's already in existence, get confidence in the demand, get confidence in the price point, sell it before it's ready at a discount even, and then over deliver to the first 10, first 20, or however many people you take on. Just give it your all and make sure you get them results so that they're singing your praises. You could even offer a discount to them on the basis that they say a nice few nice words if they get the result that you promised them. And again, that goes back to you have to actually get a result for someone. That's what makes the product so good. So build and sell, you know, sell first, build later, is the point there. So once you've got the product, here's what I want you to think about in terms of what to focus on in the business. And if you do this in 2024, it's going to transform your business, I promise you. I can't see the chat in this group, but when I talk about business, what would you say the most important thing is in business? A lot of people just focus on sales, right? So when I just explained to you that, you know, I'd never run an ad, people are like, well, how have you even done that? And that's because you're just focused on the sales. Just focus on the sales, right? There's actually nine different things that you want to focus on in your business. And you want to break it down this way so that you can pinpoint what's weak. And I want you to imagine this kind of waterfall of like that your business is like a waterfall, right? And you've got all these different buckets. The first bucket is your traffic. Okay, so the traffic is two different ways. You've got two taps there. You've got an organic tap and you've got a paid tap. The paid tap I've never used. Organic tap is your social media, word of mouth, you know, whatever you do for free to get traffic into look at your thing, right? So organic, paid, and then you've got your traffic bucket. The next thing is the leads bucket, but everyone thinks that it just goes directly to leads, but you can break that down as well. So, you know, imagine the water flowing out of the traffic into the leads bucket. In between that is a opt-in rate. So I want you to break that down. I want you to break that out. So you've got organic traffic, paid traffic, and your traffic bucket, and then you've got your opt-in rate into the leads bucket. So we've already broken out traffic and leads into 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 things, right? Then after the leads bucket, you've got your sales bucket. But between those two, you've got a conversion rate, okay? And I'll explain why this is all important in a moment. Then out of your sales bucket, you should have an upsells and continuity bucket, right? And then out of the back of your sales bucket, you've got the expenses, okay? And you only get to drink what's in the sales, like the profit bucket, the leftover profit bucket, because that's, again, a lot of business owners have their personal business, you know, their business in their personal bank account. They spend the money. And then when the tax comes, it's like, oh crap, I need to find the tax money. What we've done is we've essentially broken out the whole process of your business so that you can now visibly see, okay, right, traffic. We don't have enough traffic. Okay. Or you could say, right, I got a load of people turning up to my landing page, but they wouldn't become a lead. So there's something wrong with my opt-in. Okay. Or I got a load of people, you know, I got them to opt in, but they then wouldn't make the sale. And now you can look at the conversion rate, or you can look at the landing page that they landed on after they opted in, right? So what we're trying to do is break it out in as many pieces as possible so that we can pinpoint where the water's stopping. you imagine the water's coming down into all these buckets. Somewhere there's going to be a bottleneck. Somewhere it's going to be stopping that flow, or it's choking that flow. And by breaking it down that way, you can now start to see, okay, no one's becoming a lead. Let's look at my opt-in. I've got loads of traffic. You know, I've got 10,000 visitors that I've paid for. Or I've built a social media following to 100,000 or whatever, 10,000. They're all opting in, but they're not getting to the sales bit. What's between the sales bit and where they opt in? Well, it's my landing page, or maybe there's not enough information. Maybe I haven't hit the pain point right on the landing page. Maybe my call to action isn't clear, so they're not even going to the lead page. Make sense? Mm-hmm. So it's just breaking it down in a way where you can see it for what it is, and see where the bottleneck is, and then focus. And I'll tell you now, a lot of the time it's a traffic problem. Okay. You need more traffic. I've gone the organic route, and organic is slow, but cheap, but you end up with a lot of loyal raving fans. Paid is fast, but expensive, and you end up with a lot of support tickets, refunds, all that kind of headache, right? So you kind of have to pick what way you go down, because, you know, paid traffic doesn't always do a good job, I've heard, of picking out ideal clients for you. So that it's strangers, it's colder traffic. So depending on what one you do, you can still see, right, okay, I'm getting all the traffic, but no one's becoming a lead. That's my opt-in problem. Or I'm getting the opt-ins and they're becoming leads, but I'm not making any sales. That's a conversion rate problem. Or I'm making the sales, but I'm not upselling the next product. Therefore, I'm leaving money on the table. How can I increase the profit? So the reason the upsells and continuity piece is so important is, once you've made a sale, you want that person to spend as much money with you as possible. You want to increase something called the lifetime customer value. And that is, in my opinion, the most important metric in business, because the more you can get the same person to spend more money with you, the more money you've got to then acquire the lead or the traffic at the top, right? So it's much easier to sell to someone who's already bought from you and got a result with you than it is to go and find another new person, okay? So the upsells and continuity is, what other products can you sell to the person who's just bought your last thing? And the way that I like to think about creating products for that person is monitoring questions that come out through your program, or your original program, or your original product or service, whatever that might be. And making a conscious effort to think about what problems they've got as a result of going through your first product. So here's what a lot of people don't think about, because this is a great selling tactic as well. A lot of people don't seem to think about people having problems whilst they're going through your service. So the example I always give is, like, no one likes builders in their house, right? You want to have a building extension done, but you got to have builders in your house. And it's like, oh, I hate having builders in the house. Hate that they leave mess here. Hate that they're shouting in front of the neighbors. How they're playing live, you know, loud music and effing and blinding or whatever. There's lots of things with that service that people hate. When you go to the barbers and get your hair cut as a man, you hate the itchy neck, right? It's just something you have to endure to go to the barbers. So my advice is to like identify all the things that people might hate about doing your business. I'm not saying that they hate you literally, but there will be fears. There will be maybe some technical blocks, maybe as you get them a result part the way through your service, they've got a new problem, because they're now like consciously incompetent in some way. Now they know what they don't know. Perhaps that's unlocked another problem. Maybe they've got another question, or you see another few members get the same question keep coming up. Now it's like, right, okay, maybe I can solve that with another product, or maybe I can solve that with another service. Maybe you're a fat loss coach and you guarantee that you can lose a stone, two stone from your clients. Now they've got a problem where they need a new wardrobe. And now it's like, well, can I team up with a fashion designer, or a personal shopper, or someone who can tailor a new wardrobe, right? Or do a new fashion thing or a photo shoot or someone that you can bolt on that doesn't cost you any money, that's really, really high profit that you can then sell because that person's got a new problem as a result of going through your program. Always remember that everyone's got problems and challenges from the moment they're born to the moment they die. So there's always going to be a problem. There's always going to be a challenge that, and a new level that they need to complete or unlock, no matter where you get them to. You're not going to get them to this place where they just got no problems anymore. If you've got one of those, like, I'll take it. I'll pay whatever. But you're not going to get there, right? So there's always problems. So sitting there and consciously thinking about what's going through their head as they take this lesson or take this supplement, or, you know, have they got any fears or doubts or technical blocks or phobias, or, you know, and really getting to grips with how you can help them overcome that as another product, or even add it into your, you know, your core product. So that's kind of how I attack the whole process of the numbers. I look at the traffic, I look at the opt-in rate to the leads, I look at the conversion rate from leads to sales, I look at how much I can sell them on the back end and what money I'm leaving on the table there. And then I look at expenses. And expenses, I'll just go over this real quick because I just want to talk about kind of the structure of products. Expenses, real easy way to do this. It's really important. A lot of all business fails, you know, 1 in 10 businesses fail within 5 years or something, and then the remaining 90% of those fail within 10 years. And it's all to do with money, it's all to do with cash flow. And the easiest win I've seen in business that not many people do is just to, instead of having one bank account, have five, and have all of your income come into one bank via Stripe or PayPal, whatever your payment processor is, right? And then at the end of every month, open up four different sub accounts. And you can do this if you use Starling. You can just have these things called cards or spaces. If you have, they're sub accounts, they're literally different accounts. You can do it on Monzo, Tide, or just if you're a high street banker, just go and set up different accounts, five different accounts. Let all the money come into your main account, and at the end of the month, go and drain that account and put it into four different accounts. The first one's tax, okay? The second one is your R&D. So if you've got, you know, if you want to invest 10%, 5% into development and research and design and growth in your business, training, things like that. The next one is your operating costs. So you should know all of your software subscriptions, any staff, any contractors that you've got that work for you. You know that total monthly figure, put that into there. And then the last one is your profit account, right? And then your profit account, you know exactly what's there, what's left over, what you can drink from. And just by doing that simple thing, it might take you an hour, 2 hours. It might take you a day if you have to go and do the physical accounts. But I promise you, if you do that, it takes away so much headache. It gives you so much clarity on where everything is, right? So that would be my advice on the expenses. Touched on sales. So now I just want to touch on the kind of way that, you know, the product structure. If there's any, I can't see the chat, but if there's any high pay, like high ticket consultants, high ticket coaches and all that, just let us know in the chat. What I've seen, because I have, you know, I've worked with lots of businesses that have had high ticket products and stuff. What I've found works best is you want to have this thing called like a value ramp. If anyone's familiar with Russell Brunson, I think he refers to something similar, like a value ladder or something. But I like to call it a ramp. And the reason I like to call it a ramp is because I'm conscious about how I can get people to walk up this ramp themselves. I've never placed an ad. I want them to sell themselves, and I want it to be easy to sell to someone. So when you've got a high ticket, what you've got is effectively a wall, a brick wall, where you've got this stranger coming off the street, which is your traffic, and you're trying to put a lot of energy and effort to get them over this wall, which might be 10 grand, 20 grand, right? Anything 5, 10, 15, 20, 25 grand, something like that. It takes a lot of effort and energy to get someone over that wall. And then guess what? They're probably not going to spend another penny with you after that. You might get them some results, but it's a very, very tiring and exhaustive process. And I'm sure if there's any high ticket coaches here, you probably agree, unless you've got some elite sales team, which I doubt you're listening to me if you have. But that's what I've found. So if you look at all the best businesses in the world, the biggest businesses in the world, what they do is they have a great, you know, ecosystem of products. They've got all these different products. So if you take Apple, they've got the Macs, which cost 20 grand and 50 grand, and they've got the MacBook Pros, which cost 5 grand and 2 grand. But they've also got a very, very low barrier to entry. You can buy iTunes for nothing. It's free. And then you can go and buy an iPod, right, or a Shuffle, and then you might get the phone, and then you get so much value from that that then you want the bigger thing and the bigger thing and the bigger thing until you find yourself with, like, I'd be blown away if I knew how much the lifetime value per customer at Apple was. I'd love to find that out, but I don't know the answer, but I'm sure it's ridiculous. Yeah. And then guess what? At the end, they've got the upsells and continuity, because you want the media and the TV and all this kind of stuff, the music. So they've got you, like, sewn up, but you've walked yourself up that ramp. There's not been one salesperson selling to you, right? So this is what came to light this year when we did about 2.5 million in 3 months. YouTube. I've been growing a YouTube channel organically for the last 7 or 8 years. And I posted a video in January this year. 5 months later, in May, it triggered the algorithm. And within a very short period of time, 3 months, we had about 2 million views. Off the back of that one video, we earned 40 grand in YouTube ad rev, which, you know, amazing, right? 40 grand YouTube ad rev. People would say it's amazing. We actually earned 2.5 million, but it was only because we had that back end. So we had a low barrier to entry, a free video, which then sold people on a £300 product, which is a 30-day program. Mm-hmm. And then after the 30-day program, we had an 899 upsell. Now, the maths was 5,550 people bought that 297 program out of 2 million, right? So it was like lower than 0.5%. It was like 0.3% of the people that watched that video bought the program, which was 5,500 people. Out of those, because they got a lot of value, there was a bigger conversion on those people onto the next thing. And it turns out 280 people out of that bought the 899 upsell. So, you know, we had another 250 grand there. We had 1.6 million on the first thing, 250 grand on the second thing. And then out of those people, about 20% of those people, I think it was about 51 people, bought the £100 a month mastermind. So all in all, we did 2.3, 2.4 million pounds in 3 months from a free video. So had we not had that back end in the background, that ecosystem of products that worked that way, we would have only had 40 grand from the YouTube ad rev. But because we did have that, we got the 40 grand, but we also made £2.5 million in 3 months. And we didn't have any sales team. There was no one making calls. There was no one, you know, it was fully automated. And here's why that works so well. There's no decision makers that you need to speak to. There's no, you know, who cares if you spend £300 on a 30-day program? You're not really going to care. So you spend it, you spend 30 more days with me, and you think, this guy's, you know, I love him. You know, I want more. And you want to get closer. And I don't know if you guys have done this, but I've spent 2 hours on YouTube with someone before, and I'm like, I want to work with them. You know, you contact them because you build a lot of trust with people. Mm-hmm. So that video that I developed was 2 hours, 2.5 hours long. It was a 2.5 hour training. So when you're thinking about building a business, my advice is to see what part of the ramp is missing that you could add another piece of value to, so that they just keep walking up. If you've got something £1,000 and something of £100, can you add something that's 200 or 400, right? How can you? And then maybe there's a problem because you know all the pieces of the puzzle now, they don't jump from the 400 to the 1,000. So there's something missing here that you can then go and add another piece or add a free FAQ or download or something that answers and solves that problem, that fear that they've got from going 400 to 1,000. And by seeing it this way, you end up with a beautiful ecosystem of products that people just walk into. And what I've found building a business this way to about 1.7 to 3 million, you require minimal staff. It's very lean. And I'd rather create personally, because I just don't like people and employees. I'd rather create like a few of those than a massive empire doing 5-10 million on one business, because it's so much headache. You know, the profit drops, the freedom drops, all that kind of stuff. So I like to create lots of kind of 1.5 to 3 million pound businesses rather than massive empires. So I hope that makes sense. I know I'm talking. Wow. I've been talking for half hour already, but hopefully that makes sense so far. Yeah. Have you got any questions so far, Laura?
I've got some questions. Firstly, the organic growth in YouTube, how long were you growing for that? And then what stage do you need to get to actually get ad revenue from YouTube?
So to get ad revenue from YouTube, you need 1,000 subscribers, and you need, I think it's 10,000 hours watch time in a 12-month period. Okay, so you can double check that. I think that's still the case, but that's what it was when I was. I've been doing YouTube a long time, but there's no kind of objection there, because the video that I posted that done 2.2 million views, I could have done that on a brand new channel and it still would have worked the same way. It was all down to the fact that it was a two and a half hour video. I put a great description in there. I put all of my other videos got nowhere near that. Mm-hmm. Right. So it was a great thumbnail. It really delivered. It triggered the algorithm for retention rate, because people were spending a long time. I made sure that it was jam packed with value, fast paced, that they'd need to keep rewatch it and watch it again, and so much value that they'd want to share. Ultimately, you just give everything away for free. Like that this is the magic. Everything, like if you're going to create a free gift like that, in the format of content, like for YouTube, my thoughts on that are, you just have this in the back of your mind: how can I give them something where they just won't need me anymore? And I know this is like scary for business owners and entrepreneurs, but with the world we live in right now, where everything is available, it's the only way that you're going to get someone to even become a lead. You just give everything away for free, all of your best stuff. Literally think in the back of your mind, how can they not need me after this? And you'll deliver some amazing content. And what happens is they want to work with you even more, because it's all about trust and implementation. And they're not going to implement it because they think that they need you to help them implement it. They're not going to go away and do it on their own, no matter how much value you give them. That's what I've found. And if they do, great. All you're going to get is great feedback, testimonials. They're going to share your stuff, right? So what I've found is that works for me, and it works for other businesses that I've helped, and it's the only way that I would do it personally.
Brilliant. Okay, dokie. And back at the beginning, you mentioned about doing the research, like selling before like anything. How would you recommend business owners like reach out to their ideal client to get the research? Is it like email, Facebook groups? How would you go about that?
Yeah, so you got things like surveys, like SurveyMonkey, Typeform, all these kind of things. Your groups, your contacts, your immediate contacts, your email list. Do polls on social media. You'll always see polls on my Instagram where I'm just asking, you know, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? What are you struggling with now? Ask me a question. All those things are really, really good. But you can do little groups, pop-up groups, Facebook. You've got a Facebook group, you know, where you can literally ask questions, ask polls, multiple choice. We use Bucket.io and SurveyMonkey and What's the other one we use? There's another one. Typeform is really great, or you can use Google Forms. You know, this is these are free, free software that you can use now to just to get answers. I know it seems like that's a real simple thing, but that is one of the things that will give you the most confidence to create a product or tweak a product or build to demand rather than build to your ideas. It's a game changer.
Nice. And another one of the questions was kind of, I guess, quite similar. How do you really nail down what your ideal customer wants and then over deliver for them? So we've talked about nailing it down through the research. The over delivery then, for what would you recommend for that? Yeah.
So the over-delivery, and this is what I usually do with a beta group. So what I'll say is having a beta group or a test group is great because one, they get a discount. Two, they're really not going to complain if you're still trying to kind of build it or get it right because it's like, you know, it's fair exchange and it's like, okay, well, yeah, I gave you a discount. Let's work together to get you the result. So they're less likely to go, oh, you know, I'm going to complain about this or get the arsehole with you. so that's great. But over delivery is just basically making sure that you really get them a result. So, you know, just work a bit closer with them, go out of your way, you know, go, even if you're not being paid, make sure that you get them a result and you're there for them. Having said that, always make sure there's a boundary because people will take the piss. People just don't do the work, right? So otherwise they wouldn't be with you. And that's another point in business. You know, people buy what they want, not necessarily what they need. You know what they need. In fact, I'll talk about that in a minute. But where were we? Over delivering. Yeah. So set a boundary though. Like if it's dragging on and you've got to like 6 months or whatever your program is or 12 months. And it's like, oh, well, I can't keep doing this for free and over-delivering for free forever. So then you want to set a boundary and say, right, okay, it's coming up to 6 months or 12 months. It's been amazing working with you guys, right? Now's the time to catch up. We're going to be finishing this intake in a week's time, 2 weeks' time, a month's time, or whatever. You know, let's all do a live or jump on a call to see where everyone's at in a week's time. And you'll find that everyone sort of drives along, gets, you know, does the work, and then you've got a cutoff to say, right, how did everyone find it, what did everyone think of it, you know, where's everyone at? And usually they will say great things about the program. They'll leave a testimonial, and you've got some great testimonials to then go and share. And I always cheeky and ask them to film a video or go and video them, put some money into getting a video and get them on camera saying the words about your business, because it, you know, it really helps people want what other people want. They want the result. So if you've got a result for someone and they're telling it to camera, seeing that is a lot different from seeing you trying to sell it to me. So yeah. So that's a great thing to do. Get loads of testimonials.
Nice. Okie dokie. Right, brilliant. What's next then?
So after that, I mean, the only thing that I could, without kind of going on and on and on, is was the point that I made just there about people don't buy what they need, they buy what they want. So this is what I see on social media all the time that I think doesn't work, and this is what I don't do. Telling people what they should and shouldn't do and what they need. If I wanted a six pack and you was telling me that I need to change my mindset and need to change my shot and need to walk this and walk that and do this and do that, I'm going to tune out because I don't know that's what I need. Otherwise I would have the six pack. If I did what I needed, I wouldn't have the problem. Right. So all I know is what I want, and I want a six pack. So if someone's selling me a six pack, I'll go with them over the person that's saying you need to change your shopping list and you need to get into these habits and change your mindset. I might need to do all that stuff, but that's not going to sell me, if that makes sense. I'm going to buy the thing where, because I don't even know. I'll zone out. I'll tune out. It doesn't make sense. So if you're a property person or you're financial education or whatever you might be, people don't, you can't tell people that they need to change their mindset around money, change this, change that, change this, start saving. They don't know that they need to do that. What their goal is to be less stressed and have more freedom. That's the goal. That's all they're thinking about. They're not thinking, they can't communicate on that language because they don't know what they need. They've got a problem and they know what they want. So you need to be able to meet them where they're at. You need to be able to, in your sales language, you need to be able to say, you want this result. And, you know, I know you want this result. And some of the problems that you're experiencing as a result of not having that result are this, this, and this. And they're like, yep, 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 yep. And then you say, well, you know, I can get you this result. Let's jump on a call, do this, you know, and give them some value and give them some quick wins. But what you don't do is go, you need to do this and need to do that and need to do that and need to do that, because they're just like, well, that you're just fluffing it up. I don't believe that I need that. Once you get them in the program and you get them in the product, or you sell them the thing, then you can give them what they need. So when you take someone through your service or product, the way that I structure that whole journey is, first of all, give them some quick wins. So like give them some really quick things where they just get some immediate results straight away, like the first week. Then they're like motivated, their emotions are high. They're like, yeah, this is amazing. I've definitely made the right decision. And then you want to take them into like the depths of despair. You got to give them the hard work to do, all the stuff they need, right? And then if you give them that, by the end of the program, they'll come out thinking it was amazing because they've had to put some work in. They might not even complete the work, but you want to leave them at least where you found them, if not a bit better. And the reason that's important is because if you just give them mediocre stuff and it's not really that hard, they'll never, ever think about your service ever again. It's just, oh, it was all right. You know, I didn't really get the result. The work wasn't that hard, so I obviously haven't got the result that I wanted. Whereas if you take them and they have to, I'm sure you've done some business accelerators or business programs or something where it's like, it feels like it never ends because you just want to keep doing the thing over and over again, because it's like, Jesus, you know, it's so much to do. I've done multiple business accelerator programs where it's like, I could do it every year, that program, and still, you know, still keep going. So that's what you kind of want with your service. You want to give them some real hard stuff that they need in order to get the result. Otherwise, they'll just think it's a bit of a flaky product. If you do that, though, if you give them all of the depths of despair stuff, you end up with a lot of people just raving about your program. I've got people in my program, they form groups and they're like, I'm thinking of doing it all again. Who wants to do it with me again? And they keep going around and doing it again and again and again, because they feel like it never ends. And that's kind of how I would think about structuring your product or service if you're doing that, because hopefully that makes sense. So the language is giving them what they want, get them in, then give them what they need, but make it really hard, you know, really make sure that they have to put in some work to get the result.
Nice. So Jason, you said everything's been organic, which is just amazing. What channels are in your marketing mix? So you obviously mentioned YouTube, you've got a group as well, don't you? Could you tell us, like, where else do you promote, albeit not paid for, but where are you visible?
So Instagram, all the social media things, we obviously put out reels and stuff, but the biggest game changer for me was a newsletter that I wrote. And again, every Sunday I did this for 82 Sundays. Wow. And I spent 3 hours writing a 5,000 word email list. And again, newsletter. And again, the thought process behind that was, how can I write a newsletter where I could give everything away to them and they won't need me ever again? And literally, one of my most expensive programs that you can buy now is my newsletter. And it's like, it's just me teaching the newsletter. And I did that, and yet people still bought the program. So I wrote this newsletter, but what that did was it got a lot of people tuned in to this specific time on a Sunday where they would read the letter and they'd look forward to it. And then I got someone say, I'm dyslexic. Is there any chance there's an audible version of this? So I then read the newsletter as a podcast, and the podcast seemed to reach people in a way that I've never been able to reach or touch people before. And I believe that that's down to there's no visual suggestion. It's just voice. So people are listening to you in a very intimate location, maybe in bed, maybe on holiday, on a sun lounger, maybe in a, on a really, you know, a self-love walk or whatever it might be. And they've got no visual suggestion. So there's no visual manipulation. So all they can do is relate what you're saying to their own memories and their own life and their own perceptions. And I think that has a really, really strong connection with people, because the reviews and the feedback and the messages that we've got from that over the years have been, you know, so heartfelt and personal and amazing that I believe that that's really allowed us to create a lot of raving long-term loyal fans. And then after that, you know, it's just social media and you know, we've been able to capture all those people into an email list and then, you know, sell to them. So podcast is a game changer. If you haven't got a podcast, I highly recommend. I know some people say that don't bother with a podcast. Absolute game changer. We've earned literally millions of pounds off of just the podcast.
Oh, I love it. And yeah, there's lots of business members with podcasts, I'm sure there'll be. And it is a lot of work, isn't it? So it's something that you have to build up over time. And
yeah. Having said, I mean, I could do a whole session on podcasting if people are interested. But we when we launched our podcast, it went to number one in three categories on iTunes at the time. It's called Apple Podcast now. And there was a specific strategy that I used behind that as well. My early podcasts were literally voice notes on my phone.
I just
uploaded it. Yeah. And still today, you know, I've got a good studio, but every now and then I'll still do a voice note one and just upload the MP3 to thing. They really don't have to be polished. The worst thing you can do is think you got to go out and buy all the gear again. Just literally talk into your phone. The microphone on the iPhone is amazing. So
that's so funny, because yeah. I have listened to a lot of your beginning podcasts and I would never know that it was a voice note.
Yeah, they're all on Apple voice notes.
Nice. Love it. Okay, okay, right, go. Okay. Brilliant. Let me just
no excuse.
No excuse. I know. That is so true. Okay. So do you think most business owners can be using AI to benefit their business in some way? Do you use it?
Yeah. I recently, in fact, I could give you guys a link. Recently, I was so confident in this whole process that I live streamed building a business in a day, and it was a 13-hour live stream. And I did it from morning till evening, and I let everyone watch the whole process from scratch. And nice. I show you, yeah. And the business, the rules were, the business had to be non-competitive to anything I'd ever done before. And it had to be an idea that I came up with from scratch that morning that was nothing to do with what I was known for or anything like that. And I was going to make money. And we made about $2,500 within 2 days of launching that business. So if you guys want to watch that,
yeah,
I'll share with you the unlisted YouTube link, if you like.
Please do.
Yeah, the first half of it is streamed on YouTube, and then we took it to Zoom after lunch. And the Zoom link is in the description of the Zoom recordings in the description of the video. So I'll share that with you now. I'll post it into this chat so you guys have got it.
Amazing.
But going back to your question, I mean, it's just incredible what you can do with it in terms of freeing up some of the clicky, time-consuming work. You know, things like blogs or articles or research or processes or newsletters and copy and things like that. Really, really powerful. What I would say though is I think there's going to become a time where it's everywhere and people start to tune out to it a little bit. It's going to be robotic, where people start thinking, this isn't a real person. I need a real person. You know, I need to have some expertise to listen to, in order, you know, someone to trust. And I think that's where the people who have built strong personal brands and strong brands online are the ones that are going to reign supreme, because they'll be the ones to rescue everyone. And I think that that is where we're going to go with it. I think people are going to need rescuing. It's going to be like, I don't know who to listen to anymore. And there's going to be it's going to be saturated with AI videos and content where nothing's going to feel real, where people are just going to, you know, they're going to seek real people and real expertise. That's what I believe. So let me just find the chat. Is there a chat link?
Let me see. Chat.
There you go. Whoops.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's what I think about AI. I think it's great.
Okay. Amazing. And automation then in businesses. Are you a big fan of that? So just automating as much as you can.
Automation is a big thing for me. So here's a tip. Everything, like where business owners get stuck is they end up doing all the stuff themselves. They've never got any time to do anything, right? So what I'm a fan of is using something called Loom, right? And every single process that you do throughout the week, whether it's replying to a client email in a certain voice and explaining why you're writing what you're writing, or maybe it's a standard operating procedure, maybe it's doing some payroll, maybe it's doing logging into the back end of your website, maybe everything should be logged on a Loom video, okay, and put in a database, a spreadsheet, or we use Notion, and we've got thousands of different trainings that essentially you've done once and then never again, because someone else can learn that, right? And a lot of business owners say, well, I have to do this because only I can do this. Only I know how to speak to. It's rubbish. You know, there is a spotty kid running a McDonald's somewhere who would wipe the floor with your business. Your business is nothing to running a hospitality like McDonald's, where you got drunks coming in and fights going on. Some 17-year-old kid's running that, fine, right? So like, get out of your own way, record everything. And whenever you think that something can't be delegated, it's rubbish. It's just that you haven't actually done the training properly. And you can, as I say, you're doing an email to a client, a very tricky client. You start typing the email and you're recording the screen, and you just talk to the mic and you say, I'm going to type this, and this is why I'm typing this, because this is what I'm thinking. This is the tone of voice of the business. This is why I think what they're thinking, and this is why I'm typing this. And then you just let people watch it. You train someone else to go and reply, right? So this whole rule of do it once and never again is fantastic. And it's essentially the only thing that's going to get you to freedom, because you could have all the money in the world, and if you haven't mastered the art of delegation, you're still going to have to do all the mundane stuff, because no one knows what you like or what you want. You can't even say, well, you book my holidays. Well, okay, well, what do you want, right? It's like, oh, great, I'm stuck booking the holidays. So delegation's key to freedom. And then you could take it a step further, which we've done, and I don't want to do payroll or accounting or logging into Xero and all that kind of crap, right? So I say, right, Claire, every job that you do in your role, video, and create a video for it, right? So they create a video, and then you get the accountant to do a video of every process they do, and the tech guy to do a video of every process they do. And now you've got this database, and you've got this basic like responsibility risk thing going on, where it's like, okay, if they die or leave or whatever, I've got this section of training that I can go and train someone else. You can even build into a contract where before they leave, they have to train someone on all of these videos and score them and make sure they're ready and get signed off by you. And then you can leave. You know, you can have all that stuff in your contract. So start thinking about delegation. And I highly recommend Loom. Loom is such a great tool. I don't know if you've heard of it, but you just install the little widget on your computer. You click record. You speak to the thing, and then you click stop, and it saves it in Loom, which is a online. So it's just a URL, and you just copy the URL and you can save it in a spreadsheet or whatever. We use Notion because you can categorize like marketing, products, sales, finance, all that kind of stuff, admin. And it's really, really, really nice. So those two things, get on that tomorrow. Like literally next task you do, just record it.
Love it. Okay. Right. Somebody's messaged me to say podcast strategy. Yes, please. But I'm so conscious of your time. Jason, so maybe we could have a wee catch up in the new year or something like that, because I would love to hear from you in podcasts as well. But honestly, this has been so good. I've actually taken so many notes myself. And
Amazing.
there's a few members saying, I forgot this was on. I'm going to watch the replay on the dog walk tomorrow. So there we go. So all good.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to share that link quickly in the chat because I've just copied that. So let me just post that link to the thing. And then with the podcast, yeah, I'd happily do a whole workshop with you guys on that because yeah, we've done it. We've done it multiple times, and every podcast we've done it with has gone to number one in a category or two. So yeah, really, really cool. Maybe that's the next session.
That's the next session. So tell us, Jason, for anyone that's watching us, you've mentioned your program. How can people find out more about that, and where can they connect with you on?
Yeah, honestly, my only like call to action when I do these kind of sessions is just if you listen to my podcast, episode one, you'll get a real good insight into what I'm about, why I do what I do, and I'll take you through step by step on what I recommend you do in terms of your own personal finance, building a business, and whatever you want. So go and listen to Always Free Podcast, episode one. And you can go to jasongraystone.com to find me on all of the socials.
Nice, and I'll share the links underneath the chat as
Thank
well,
you.
so that ladies can just click right through. Well, listen, thank you so much for joining me again and for sharing your wealth of knowledge. And I would absolutely love to catch up with you again. So thank you for joining us, and thanks, ladies, for watching. And anyone watching the replay, put replay below so we're pushing this video out to more members. So thank you so much, Jason.
Amazing. Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank
Thank you,
you.
guys.
Yeah, I'm just gonna start recording.